Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila and Leo will be with us in a minute. Tonight's guest, of course, is our regular partner in conversation, George Dixon, and he'll be with us in a minute. And our special guest this evening is Preston Nichols. And Preston is an author, an inventor, a man basically for all seasons who's done many things. And his area of special interest is Montauk and explorations in consciousness. And another book that he has written or co-authored, Encounter in the Pleiades, an inside look at UFOs, and Montauk Revisited. And his co-author was Peter Moon. And we've had Peter on before, and now we're going to have the pleasure of having Preston on. And I see that George Dixon is with us and called, and I will get him on the air.
Good evening, Lila.
Oh, good evening, George. How are you?
I'm fine. Do yourself?
Oh, I'm very well, thank you. And cool. I understand you've been able to get our very special guest on tonight.
Lila, Preston Nichols.
Yes, wonderful. Is he with you?
Yes. Preston?
Yeah, I'm here.
Good evening, Preston. Welcome to the show. And here's Leo.
Hey, Preston. Glad to have you on.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
One big happy party.
What's that?
Huh?
We're like one big happy party. I think the last time we met was about 4 or 5 months ago in your laboratory. Remember that?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was longer than that, wasn't it?
Actually, that was last...
The last time we met was at your party, George.
Yeah.
Oh.
The 4th of July, actually, we were there. And before that, we were out at Preston's house and had a very interesting experience there, which we'll share at another time. Maybe even tonight. But right now, we wanted to talk a little bit about some of the books that...
Well, we were going to talk, I guess, about the Montauk Project.
And that was specific,
and
yes.
The books that we have, well, we have all of them here. You know, we're big fans of yours, and George gave them to us to give back to him. He lent them to us, so we want to thank him for that. Because, I tell you, I went through this for the whole summer, this series, and I kept referring back to the most fascinating stuff I've ever read. And grateful to you there. I think I'm going to call you the father of electronic sound.
Okay.
What do you think? Huh?
I don't know.
I was thinking of Preston. I was thinking, are you on Facebook? I was thinking of putting you up there as the. I'll put a face up there for you. I mean, I'll put a.
No, I'm not on any of that.
I'll say, father of.
I personally hate computers with a passion.
Father of electronic sound. Think about it. I'll start a fan club.
Well,
I'm not the father of electronic sound. Actually, electronic sound goes back to Edison, RCA, and those people.
I know, but you perfected it. Right?
No, I'm not really the first one to perfect it.
No, you're too modest.
Preston is very modest, I think. But let's get right to it. Pyramids of Montauk. When the title of that book is very specific, is there in fact a pyramid under Montauk, and is that why that location was selected for so many experiments and projects, Preston?
Well, there is a underground pyramid that I understand has been picked up by ultrasonic ground penetrating sonar in the 30s,
mm-hmm.
that is essentially right under that big six-story building that sits right in the middle of the village. From what I've been told, the pilings for that building go down, and one each is on the side of the pyramids.
Oh.
And for those listeners who don't know a lot about this, why would it be important to situate your building on top of a pyramid, Preston?
Well, you got to remember, most of Long Island is a sandbar. This is why you don't see buildings over 2 or 3 stories in general.
Oh.
And if you're going to build a big building, you know, beyond five or six stories. You got to basically give that building a footing.
Well, that makes sense.
For people that build buildings like that, they like to put the footings right into bedrock. And I guess the pyramid structure was the closest thing they had to bedrock.
Well,
that would make a nice stable footing for the big building.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. But are there any special properties that would be in a pyramid that would make it even more desirable for the kinds of projects that we understand occurred at Montauk?
Well, the projects actually occurred closer to the point than where the pyramid is.
Oh, I see.
From what I've been able to gather, the pyramid was discovered. Then the government, the military, built a large underground facility in order to have a purchase to launch tunnels off of to go to the pyramid and to go inside of it. Now, you got to remember, a pyramid is essentially a quantum energy lens.
Right.
It focuses or concentrates the energy. That's what I do with the pyramids under my place here in Cairo, New York.
Right.
Is that pyramid is actually a power source. It pulls energy from the center of the planet and concentrates it into a beam that comes out of the tip of the pyramid, which is right in the sound room that you guys were in, is right over the tip. And where you put the head on the lounge bed is right over the tip of the pyramid.
Now, Preston, that answers a question that I had, because I did notice at your place, I didn't have a satellite hookup. The satellite radio that I have in my car, it went out. And
yeah, that's to be expected.
Yeah, it's about a half-mile radius around the around your place. Yeah.
Yes, I know, actually. It can be more like a mile or two.
Uh-huh. You know, it baffled me for about 10 minutes, and then I hit my head, so you dummy. I didn't think about it, but that was the reason why the signal went out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the energy is, see, this whole valley going from the Green Mountains in, Massachusetts and Vermont, over the Hudson, the Hudson River, up towards Windham. You know, Windham Mountain, this whole valley, as far as the Native Americans go, is known as the Valley of the Pyramids. And from what the legend has, there's hundreds, maybe thousands of pyramids in this valley.
Really?
Well,
wouldn't surprise me.
The reason you have Sleepy Hollow, Rip Van Winkle, all of that. This is a very magical area.
You know, it's also noted for UFO activity down the Hudson,
mm-hmm.
one of the parts. And
yes.
I think Phil Imbrogno, he wrote about it years ago.
Well, he was writing about that big wedge-shaped ship that was coming out of the old Rome ADC, the old Rome Air Force Base.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
And I got news for the people. That's ours.
What's that?
Explain to you what you mean by ours, Preston.
We built it.
Okay.
We built what?
That's
we
ours.
What did we build?
We
hired Rome Air Force Base.
Excuse me.
What did we build?
Back for that type of activity, last night I was looking at what's known as rods on my infrared video camera that I use for security here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's some sort of paranormal activity.
Hmm.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. It would surprise me. Like you said, for years it's been noted to be different, Sleepy Hollow and so forth.
Right.
There's a lot of sacred sites that go down the Montauk or the Hudson Valley area.
Oh, yeah, this is not the only site.
Mm-hmm.
It may be one of the more powerful ones, but it's not the only site.
Well, is that because if there are UFOs that frequent that area, is it because they derive energy from these pyramidal points?
That's possible. We don't know for sure.
Kind of like a gas station, Yeah, like they fill up or they recharge their battery.
Well, some people do believe that there are underground caverns here in the Catskills, and
oh.
Iron Mountain, I believe, has entrances here, which is used for storing information.
Oh, yeah,
and other things.
Yeah. But there has been quite a bit of UFO activity where people have actually seen ships go into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And, I do believe there is underground caverns there that do lead to the
Earth. Oh, yes, there is.
Mm-hmm. And, it's part of the geomagnetic field that runs down this valley that, gives the ability to, travel with some of these different energy systems.
Now, you just happened to mention that ships go into the ground, and you said, and other things. What would be
mm-hmm.
those other things?
Trucks with supplies.
Trucks with supplies, critters,
mm-hmm.
uh-huh.
people.
Uh-huh. Okay.
There's a whole slew of mysticism and stories, that people have read into, including mass mutilation of animals, tractor trailer cars of animals going into these places and coming out empty and used for experimentations. But, these are just part of the rumors and the stories, that connect to this mysterious place.
When you get a magical area like the Wyndham Valley, you get all sorts of rumors and stories and legends. The legends here abound.
Hmm.
Now, has anybody actually tried to document these legends and stories?
Oh, the caves have been pretty much documented.
Mm-hmm.
The Catskills are full of caves.
Yeah, I've actually been in some where they have, stalactites and stalagmites and all kinds
mm-hmm.
of things, and those are open to the public. There was nothing mysterious about that.
You know, one I wanted to ask you?
Ever hear of Howell's Cavern?
Yeah, that's where I've been.
Yeah, that's up in Schoharie County.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
There's quite a few of them here in the area.
Get back to the month, to the Indians for a minute, who said it was the Valley of the Pyramids?
Right.
Yes.
Were their ancestors pyramids, or the builders of those pyramids, or how did they is it indigenous or what? In other words, were they
not indigenous? We believe the pyramids were built about 100,000 years ago here.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
We have soft evidence, which is psychic reads and stuff like that, and hard evidence. The only hard evidence we have is that the underground pyramids exist.
Mm-hmm.
Soft evidence, of course, abound, and the commonality between the different psychics that read this stuff seem to be about 100,000 years ago. It was built by somebody that was here.
Would you have any guess to who that might be?
No, we don't.
No, okay.
And
I just wanted to ask you because it was important to Thomas Jefferson. All right, he was recorded. This was in Peter Moon's book. I think it was in I don't know if it was Transylvania Sunrise or someone. But one of the books, he states that he had, trying to remember now, that Thomas Jefferson was involved with the Masons, and of course they wanted to. He wrote down. He was the first guy to ever write down the Montauk language. All right.
The Montaukit language.
Montaukit language.
The Indian language.
And he wanted, and there was something very special, very very important for him to do that for and bring it. And what he did, I guess he brought it back to the lodge, and they tried to figure out what the secret was to the pyramids through that language, I guess. But my question is that what do you know what it was that was that they were trying to get from the Montauk?
What was he looking for?
Yeah, the key. It sounds like they were looking for the key to...
Well, you got to remember, the Montaukets, the family name is Farrow.
That's right, the Farrow.
And the Montaukets.
They said that.
And it does tie back to Egypt and
right.
Atlantis.
Right, right.
And we're told that the language was known as Vril, V-R-I-L. Which is the believed to be the language of the ancient Atlanteans.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, are there descendants of those Montauk Indians today?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, is their blood type unique?
I don't know. I never went into that myself.
Because of the blue blood.
Because of the blue blood.
Rh negative
mm-hmm.
Factor. That would be Martian, basically, or alien. But that was what they...
Would link them to the pharaohs.
But that's what the pharaohs were, right.
Mm-hmm.
And they are... the pharaohs were alien. Yeah, actually, alien. Their skulls were very different, and they were very tall. So it was... they were different. And I don't know where I'm going with this, but I do know that, we wondered if there had to be some reason that Thomas Jefferson was interested in doing this and where it was going to and what kind of information he was trying to find mine from that.
Well, you got to remember the, the Freemasons go back to Scotland, Britain, and it can be traced all the way back to the Temple Knights.
Right.
Which, of course... was highly involved, the early Freemasons and the Temple Knights, in researching King Solomon's Mound over there. And that whole thing goes back to the Atlanteans and, what language was involved and, all that stuff.
Right.
Preston, you're referring to the Knights Templar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Temple Knights.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they do. The lineage does goes back to, the Old Testaments and
mm-hmm.
Tower of Babel and so forth. Yeah.
Hey, I'm sorry. How strong are the? I know there's the Templars are still around, but how strong are they, or have another faction of the Masons taken over?
Well, I think I'm not going to go into that.
Because I wondered if the Templars were more or less ornamental now. Nowadays, and it's more.
Well,
the Knights Templar became the Freemasons, the Scottish Rite.
Right.
Right.
Well, let's get back to Montauk. What was there an original purpose to these experiments at Montauk that we read about? What was their end goal in experimenting with time and the other things they experimented with there at Montauk?
Well, the original purpose was literally electromagnetic mind control, which evolved out of the research to develop the stealth technology that came out of the Philadelphia experiment.
Okay.
And the time aspect was a Johnny-come-lately, which was noticed as a side effect of the mind control, essentially. The machine that was built out of Montauk was a large, very powerful mind amplifier and could bring into fruition whatever a person's mind that's sitting in the input chair could think of. It was basically like a super wish machine.
I've never heard it put that way before, Preston.
But that's essentially what we built out there was a mind amplifier.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, one would hope to have a good person sitting in that chair then.
Say again?
One would hope you'd have a very good person sitting in that chair,
You wouldn't want a demon or something,
sitting in that chair.
Well, the person that would sit in the chair basically became a conduit to concentrate on the information that was given to him.
Okay.
The person in the chair would neither be good or bad because generally these people, the chair people, were put into a deep trance.
Okay. No, but I was thinking the thoughts, not so much the biological aspect, but But the thought processes of a sociopath would affect, since I've been on that chair, I think if you didn't have the right mindset, you could create a whole lot of problems, you know, where you're,
oh, yeah.
You know what I mean, for yourself and for others.
In the chair was something,
yeah,
like,
why don't you guys discuss the chair for a few minutes? I gotta go visit the little room.
Okay.
Okay.
So I'll be back in about 2 minutes.
Okay.
Preston doesn't like to talk about computers, but you know, basically the chair was a direct connection to the computer, and that's with a USB connection. Very simple. But what it did is it took the information from the operator, which was a human living operator, and
right.
That fed it into the computer,
now,
where it would amplify it.
Do you think some positive developments came out of this research?
Oh, I'm sure. Both positive and negative, dear.
What do you think we're benefiting from now?
From that research.
And what do you think we're not benefiting from?
It depends on how you look at it.
Yeah.
You know, for basic energies, you know, this is on the same playground as scalar energy, scalar waves, higher forms of energy.
Oh, okay.
And you know, the ELF, extremely low frequency. Preston could talk more about that. This is his field.
Yeah.
But you know, there was a lot of technology that came out of that. That was for, it was good. But there was also bad stuff by being able to, let's say, control people or manipulate manipulate atoms and living things.
Right. I felt that. But I have to admit, I had a extremely incredible time, and I know Lila did too. The visions that we had as we sat there, or as we laid in that under that with the sound and everything. We were into some other place, I'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
I had Indian drums. You know, I had an Indian.
Well, that's different from the chair they developed at Montauk.
No, it was.
I'm back.
Now, was that the same or different, George?
Preston, the question is the chair of the table is connected to your sound system now. How is that related to, let's say, the chair at Montauk?
It's the same basic function,
right.
Except the detecting mode is in the audio region, not in RF. The chair at Montauk used multiple HF receivers picking up the background noise out of the nervous system and then went to a computer for decoding.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I remember well that this large speaker was under your back, you know, as you lay down there. And
well, that's the bed shaker.
The bed shaker, yeah. And
see, for healing sound, you want to go all the way down almost to DC.
It almost like vibrated your body.
It
vibrated your spirit right out of your body. It was an out-of-body experience, actually, that I had. And it was,
it could be.
Remarkable.
If nothing else, it awakened that energy.
That energy in me, yeah.
In you, yeah.
I know Lila had a tremendous a vision as well. Did you tell him what it was?
Yeah.
The sunflower.
Yeah, I had. We talked about that.
Yeah. Yeah. You told Preston, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember that?
There.
Yeah. Lila became a sunflower, you know, and she kept multiplying and multiplying and multiplying to bigger and bigger and bigger sunflowers. She just a spectacular sunflower, or field of sunflowers, right?
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
And
I have to think a little more about it.
And my vision was that I was soaring over. I was in a forest because I was playing this Indian music, and I was in a forest and I could feel my. Looked. I felt like I was a bird. I felt like I was an eagle of some sort, and I was just looking out at a lake. On a branch, and I could see forest on both sides, and as I and then all of a sudden, as the music increased toward maybe 3 or 4 minutes, as the music surged, feel myself taking off as a bird, huge, bird encompassing the entire sky over this lake and mountain. And it was just, I felt, I don't know, a remarkable sense
of... It was a great experience to have. But I was wondering, Preston, what were the positive things that you think came out of these Montauk experiments?
I guess basically knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And the connection to the Christ legend that there appears to be.
Can you explain that?
What we believe is that the Montauk Project is like a key project of the whole series going back 3 million years and ahead 6,000 years, and that it made up one super project. Literally created this artificial reality we're living in.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah.
Duncan Cameron, who was the main chairperson, has recollections of going to 6037, jumping on that horse that was in the Dead City, you know, that marble horse on pedestal full of technology, and literally being transported back to 3.6 million BC, very similar to the Arthur Clarke concept of the,
time machine?
No, that rectangular thing that they featured in 2001 Space Odyssey, which was from
monolith.
The future back to the past and programming and conditioning the early ape man and doing modifications of the early ape man. The monolith I was trying to think of.
Monolith, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, Preston, you said that created an artificial reality for us.
Yes.
So I personally
believe that this project, this overall project, is what the Bible refers to original sin, the sin of knowledge.
Oh.
Now that's an interesting thought, Preston.
Yeah, so we can see the connection. Now, if that's the case, this machine that you had created, I know, transported you to multidimensional realities. Is that true? Or parallel reality.
You're talking about the project machine or the sound equipment?
The sound machine, yeah.
Yeah, you got to realize there's more than just sound involved there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm dealing there with vacuum tubes.
Right.
And essentially, I've optimized it to the point where the vacuum tubes generate what we call a quantum singularity. And you get quantum fields. A quantum matrix generated in the room, which your mind can directly interface with. And that sound equipment is also a mind-amplifying device as well.
You know, if I can step in for a second here. And, Preston, I'm going back to 1989 at the Grossman Conference in New York, where I believe the Philadelphia experiment was released. But you introduced your sound system. And let me explain what this sound system did. It was a sound system using CDs. And what I would do is that I would listen to it, and I would be able to pick up the emotional feelings of the author, whoever was singing that.
Oh, yeah.
What his system did is that it picked up the energetics of the recording. And you felt, you heard not only the music, but you felt what he was feeling. Now, my experience was I was listening to Glenn Campbell, I believe,
mm-hmm.
and Wichita Lineman, or one of the songs. But automatically, I went off in Never Never Land, in a sense, where I seen him fighting with his wife, and I seen a lot of bad things around him. I mean, he was in a bad state, emotional state.
Yes,
and,
this is true.
And, you know, I didn't realize what I was experiencing. I was listening to the music, but I was experiencing what he was feeling at the time of the recording.
Yes, this is true.
Yeah, so this is what the system did. Now,
and of course, the modern-day system is much more developed.
Well,
it's developed more yet.
Let me explain what I experienced with your new system now.
Yeah.
Now, I not only was able to tap into the sounds of the music that you were playing, but my body reacted. It's not just my thinking. My whole body reacted to the emotions of the music and of the everything that I was pulling from that, not only emotionally, but also by hearing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I have to say, touche, my friend, your device is beautiful because
it's just a remarkable instrument to elevate the consciousness to a level of, you know, mind over matter.
Yeah, people come up here just for that, to elevate consciousness, develop their consciousness.
That's it. You just do, and it's, you don't see things in the same perspective afterwards. You're not as myopic, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you can stand back a ways, almost as though you're out of body, and you get a more of an overall perspective of what you should do next. You know what I mean? And
mm-hmm.
As opposed to being in it and being, you know, being in the world and frightened by everything and not knowing anything.
This is beginning to sound like a commercial for my services.
Well, Preston, you got to understand, you normally don't hear about things like this, but even people who put things like this together, you know, in a capitalistic society, you know, they would keep this hush hush for as long as they could until they can, before they could stop making money with it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, go ahead.
Now, my question, Preston, is this may seem like a dumb one, but we've been talking about realities. What is reality?
Reality is whatever you personally want to make it.
Okay.
You have that power. You just have to develop it.
Yeah.
And believe it.
That's true. And your machine kind of gives you that that perspective. It gives you the height of mind. To be able to view things from a more vertical rather than a lateral or linear.
Well, it allows you to see things in different parallel realities.
Absolutely. And
it allows you to connect your awareness, your physical consciousness to your soul consciousness.
That's right. No, that's absolutely right.
And your soul consciousness exists on at least 11 parallel realities, including this one we're in.
I mean, if I could tell people, you know, anything, if they ever wanted to try whatever it was, what would be the warning that you would give people? I would highly recommend it, but, you know, doing this, but what would be your warning as the creator of it? What would be your warning?
Well, I can honestly say that nobody has had a bad experience.
Oh, that's great. That's good.
So I don't know what a warning would be. I guess a warning would be it can become addictive.
Hmm. Yeah, it would keep you in a fourth-dimensional or eighth-dimensional
mm-hmm.
reality constantly.
And I am open for people to come and, so to speak, take rides on the equipment.
Oh, I would love to do that again. You know,
anytime you want.
All right, well,
we're coming out of the snow season right now.
Yeah, we'd love to take
it. What I
got to
do is go in and clean up that room again.
Yeah, we have to say, folks, it's been used, all right. But it's like, consider yourself on a ride for I don't know how to explain it, but it doesn't.
I believe this spring we'll have meetings there.
Mm-hmm.
People from around, you know, this area here will be able to, you know, entertain themselves with it, but
mm-hmm.
also see some of the the electronics that goes behind it.
Dollars a ride.
Well,
yeah,
you know,
5-minute ride.
What it's about is trying to find out more, not entertainment. I mean,
That's right.
You know,
it's a wonderful experience.
I don't think we should minimize what this is.
No, it's a valuable tool to your subconscious. And
I use it for meditation or vision questing.
Yeah. It's definitely. I mean,
I'm now known as the musical shaman, the musical technical shaman.
The musical.
You know,
shaman.
Being that I'm part Native American.
I was going to ask you, do you have indigenous people come and talk with you about this?
Oh yeah.
Oh, that'd be great. We'd love to attend some of those. And music
can be one of the most powerful meditative aids. You know, aids of meditation that you can have.
Yeah.
Music can take you right to a place, almost any place you want to go with it.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, well, sound is very important. What you say and how you say it
mm-hmm.
has always been minimized in our society, but it's probably one of the most important things, I think.
Yes.
Because actually, you know, spoken language can affect the development of crystals, and especially harsh and unpleasant language. People don't realize.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but even pleasant language creates more beautiful crystals.
That's right.
More geometrically perfect crystals, and then the negative creates these deteriorating crystals.
And maybe if people saw more of that, they wouldn't speak so poorly.
Yeah. Whenever I get angry and want to curse all over the place, sometimes I just think of that experiment. You know that crystals destroy and. Then it thinks I can stop myself. But sometimes I can't. We've probably all been there. I know Lila has been.
Do you think, Preston, that we're going the right way from these experiments that have happened at Montauk? Do you think that the government is using this information in the right way, or would you like to see some of it not used? Do you think there are things we have to be careful of?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
What do you think, George? You're very quiet there.
Well, with everything, you know, I take the neutral stand. I mean, you have good aspects and bad aspects coming from this. But, you know, the thought that I had and the question that I was going to ask Preston, that I know Peter Moon, he co-wrote the Transylvanian Sunrise.
Yeah.
But he mentions there that they have a Hall of Record in the Bulski Mountains in Romania.
Gesundheit.
Yes, thank you. And my question was they found that this cavern or this Hall of Records deep within this mountain was connected or tunneled to Iraq, to Baghdad.
Oh, no kidding.
And yes, well, the reason why they found this out was there was an alarm. There was a joint effort, I believe, with the Romanians and the Americans who actually went into the Hall of Records in the mountains.
I remember that.
And
yeah, I remember that. You said that.
I'm
okay.
Finished. Go ahead, George.
Yes, and what happened is the guards and so forth, or the people who were watching the entrance in Iraq, got some type of signal. Or there was some kind of device or signaling device which told them that somebody broke into another chamber or was in another chamber that was connected with that.
Right. I remember you said that.
Now, I believe there was another connection that was – oh, I believe it was a connection that went to Tibet in the Tibetan mountains.
Mm.
Now, I'm just wondering, is maybe this pyramid that, Preston, you were talking about – underneath Montauk, you think that could be another entrance or a possibly Hall of Records cachet, if you'd want to call it that?
Well, I don't know if it's a records per se, but when we finally got in that pyramid on the Montauk,
mm-hmm.
it was filled with optical technology.
Mm-hmm.
Optical, yeah, what do you mean?
It was filled with a technology base.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Which, for most likely, is from Atlantis.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me there, but I know there is connections with in a tunnel system that goes out, you know, to the Midwest and other places, I'm sure. But I wondered if if this possibly could hold a record, past cultures or even aliens.
Yeah, very possibly.
Yeah.
So when you think of aliens, which aliens are you thinking about, George? Which cultures?
Well, I think at this point, I would have to go to the Martians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Martians.
What about...
And I should say extraterrestrials, maybe from this solar system, you know, and other planets in our system.
What about the Pleiades or Cirrus?
Oh, well, you know, those...
Well, the Pleiadians were definitely involved.
Yeah. I don't know about the Syrians have been involved, but I don't know. I don't know.
Preston, you said the Pleiadians were directly involved. How were they involved?
Well, the Pleiadians have always had a soft spot, so to speak, for mankind.
Mm-hmm.
Because mankind... was one of their experiments.
Now, you claim that...
We've always had an interest in the intelligent development of life here on this planet, right
mm-hmm.
here and now, and going back through the ancient past. The Pleiadian influence goes back at least 250,000 years.
Now, you were, in your book, Encounters in the Pleiades,
I'm not sure what I just said, but I was just
But I was just saying,
you know, bringing the influence through.
There you go.
No, but I'm looking at the book right now. It's Encounters in the Pleiades, an inside look at UFOs. And I believe it was in this book that you said that you had at the age of 11 or 12 or something, you were abducted.
17.
Was it 17?
17.
Because I remember the story that you told about. Being in the an auditorium and being able to fix the electronic speakers.
Mm-hmm.
You were about 12 or 13 years old. You said you had an unusual understanding of electronics at a very young age. And I think
yes, I did. That's right.
And then you were abducted, but you.
Yeah, I went for a trip at 17.
Right. Oh, you went for a trip at 17.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they taught you this advanced electronics. Is
right.
That's what it was, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I recall that. I was so floored, Preston, by this stuff. I probably wanted to call you 100 times to ask you about this, but I said, no, I better read more. I wanted to read a little more because I just couldn't believe how much you have accomplished in this field of electronics and electromagnetics and all of the stuff and the sound, everything that you've done.
Now, Preston, are you still traveling and taking trips?
I really don't know for sure.
You don't?
I don't know for sure.
Do you follow your intuition? I mean, do you follow like if something says I got to go do this, you know, I have to.
Do you just go and do it?
Do you just kind of impulsively follow it, or do you have to really think about it and weigh it and everything else? Or do you just kind of go where the inspiration takes you?
Both. All the above.
Yeah.
All the above. Preston does about anything he wants. If he feels like working today, he works. If not, he doesn't.
Oh, I got new tires. I'm retired.
Oh, there you go.
So, you know, I got new tires. I can, you know, I don't have to worry about where my next meal is coming from and social insecurity.
You're good for another 30,000 miles, all right?
yeah.
So that's great, but no, we'd love to come back and see you and get on that ride with you again, get on that journey. But it was fun. Johnny had a great time too. He got a little
John Berman,
John Brennan,
mm-hmm.
the Irishman.
Yeah.
Drum room?
Yeah.
Well, John got a little strange because he put all that organ music on, remember? And that Irish organ music or whatever it was. And he just...
Oh, the organ music was Bach.
Was it Bach?
Yeah, I think it was.
I called it Irish organ music.
Yes, it was.
That was Bach, what I call the church sequence.
Right. But he just I don't know where he went with that one, and he wasn't sure either. But he had a great time, and I think he'd like to do it again.
Sure.
You know, if I can interject here, you know, most of the equipment that Preston has built is all vacuum tube amplifiers and so forth. He's not one for solid state. Preston, what is your reasonings behind the electronics and why you like vacuum tubes instead of transistors?
Vacuum tubes have what I call a quantum well. Under the right conditions, a vacuum tube, you can put enough voltage on them to where literally between the grids, local space is torn apart, and you get something like a miniature black hole. Now, this allows you to cross all the parallel realities. Although I do use transistors in the base. The base response is all transistor, because you can't beat transistors for base response. But the mid-range and treble is all vacuum tubes, and the quantum activity is from the vacuum tubes, and the base is like a basic matrix that the quantum energy forms on in the room.
Oh, I see. Now, you explained that to us, too, before we got on, but, of course, it wasn't until afterwards that you realized what you had invented there was unique.
There's something else going on besides noise.
Being an empath, I know what Preston, what he's saying is true, because I can tell the difference between a vacuum tube receiver or a transistor receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I think, through his equipment, I was able to single it out where I have a response to it. And I can tell, it's pure. And it's much purer. That's about all I can say about it.
But you got to remember, in the old days, everything was vacuum tubes, and the old radio operators, they would sit in their receiving station listening to background noise, and these guys swore that they would hear voices in the noise.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that they could communicate and talk with the voices, and the voices would give them answers.
Have you ever... Have you ever experienced that?
Yes, I've heard voices in the noise of vacuum tube receivers. I've never heard it in a solid state receiver.
Is that what they call? That's what they call white noise, right? No.
White noise is a function that has the same amount of energy at every frequency within the spectrum that you're specifying.
So these
pink noise favors the low frequency end.
Oh, okay.
So, Preston, the voices that you heard, did you talk with them?
Yeah, I used to do that as a kid.
Oh, and where were those? Who did those voices belong to?
We don't know.
You never
had an aspect of yourself that the equipment's allowing you to access.
Oh, okay.
Now I recall this might be something that you don't have to talk about it, but it's in your book, was how you discovered yourself through past life regressions when you were studying for psychiatry, the psychiatry or just psychology? I think
psychology.
You went for a degree, another degree, and it was in your past life regressions that you discovered so much about the uniqueness of your
history.
Or history, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, a very unique
spiritual history, yeah.
Yeah.
And
I seem to go right back to Tchaikovsky.
There you go.
Well, that could explain my musical talent.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I used to say my instrument was a tape recorder.
And it wasn't.
I always had a talent to put together a rock performance.
Yeah. Yeah, well...
And, of course, I learned classical music at my mother's feet because my mother was a musician, and she knew her classical music, and she taught me a lot about classical music.
But you were now when you founded Buddha Records, it was you. Yeah, you put that together, and you produced the Doors and the Beatles and the Stones and the,
yeah, that was working with Phil Spector.
Right, and you created the specific sound that today is still.
No, I didn't create the wall of sound. I helped Phil optimize it.
Okay.
The original wall of sound, as with the Ronettes and the Crystals, the fidelity wasn't all that great on that stuff. There was a lot of distortion.
Yeah, there was.
But then we took the wall of sound for when the Righteous Brothers were making their recordings and optimized it to where there was virtually no distortion. And he used that. Of course, that was basically a copy of the same setup that was under that round building in Los Angeles that says Capitol Records on it. They have whole echo chambers down below it with speakers and microphones in it. That's probably where Phil got the idea.
Yeah, I forgot that what you called your studios, Studio One, Studio Two. What the name of that? I'd have to look it up in your book there. But you had a specific. It was called a specific name. It had for the studio.
It was Bell Sound.
Bell Sound. Okay, thank you. I forgot what it was. So yeah, Bell Sound. And now those are still standing today in some form or another, right?
No, I think they're gone.
Are they gone?
Like the master recorder we bought down on Canal Street is sitting on my porch right now.
We actually used
the Bell Sound to record the Moody Blues, Days of Future Past. That's sitting right on my front porch, that machine, yet.
But you know the one with the but the one you did with the you designed the Abbey Road.
I redesigned.
Oh, you redesigned. And then you didn't put it up over there yourself. You designed it and everything so that it could be transported, and then it was put up over there. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I made a few trips just to get it all running well.
Right. And so actually the Abbey Road studio where they...
That was my first experience with those weird faders that the EMI had made.
Yeah.
But they actually brought that mix board over here for me to refurbish.
Hmm. Now,
you know, with that weird fader system they used.
Yeah. How are they? Yeah, we're talking about the Beatles now. But how are they? How did they receive? How did their music? I was trying to remember the albums that they did during that period, like Abbey Road, of course. But then Let It Be, I guess, was the one after that. Did they do one between there? Magical Mystery Tour, maybe? I can't remember. But
I don't remember either.
I don't
That's
remember.
That's quite a while ago, guys.
That's all ancient history.
Long time ago.
Yeah. That was all done on that sound system that you built, correct?
Mm-hmm. A lot of it was done.
A lot of it, right? Because I remember the uniqueness of the sound, the Abbey Road sound, especially with Harrison. My Sweet Lord song.
Mm-hmm.
There's something absolutely amazing about that particular song. That one I remember. But
of course, Sgt. Pepper was done right in New York.
Now, Here Comes the Sun. Here Comes the Sun was on that.
Yeah, that was done in England.
Yeah.
You got to understand, a lot of things happened in electronics in those years, the 50s and the 60s. I mean, going to transistors.
Mm-hmm.
And even in using it to produce music, you know, there's a lot of experimentation that went on, you know, and some of it was exposed with the rock music. There's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the music itself is the key or the objective here.
Well, we really did not get away from vacuum tubes until about the mid-70s.
Yeah. Were you involved?
There was still a lot of, in the late 60s through the early 70s, there was still a lot of vacuum tube equipment out there in the different recording studios.
Were you out there doing the, were you there in the, the Sgt. Pepper? Were you involved with the Sgt. Pepper?
Yes, I was.
All of them, yeah. And then what was it that you were able to create there? That was before Abbey Road.
Yes, it was prior to Abbey Road. In fact, it was the Sgt. Pepper project that got me the job to refurbish the Abbey Road's studio.
Because those were outstanding albums. They were just outstanding.
What part of, was there a specific part of the brain that they were targeting with all their music?
Or was there a...
I guess the part of the brain that has dollar bills in it.
It has a dollar bill.
I remember Paul McCartney is a fabulous businessman.
Yeah.
So focusing in on the sexual chakras.
That too. What do you always hear? Sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
There you go.
Yep.
You know what I read today? I was reviewing...
Day in the Life was basically a drug trip.
Well, I was...
Life is a trip.
I read today, I was reviewing a book today by this author who quotes McCartney as stating that he, when he wrote Yesterday, remember Yesterday, he said it was there was a quote by him in the book, and it was he stated that he received that in a dream. All right, he got that in a dream, and he woke up and he couldn't remember if he wrote it or where he got it from, because he couldn't remember writing it, and then it just came to him, and he put it down, and it became the most played song of all time on radio.
Bob Dylan said didn't he say similar things, that he could never touch the
In the last interview, one of the last interviews he gave for television, he stated that the interviewer asked him if he could
capture that
voice that he had back then, and he looked at him sadly and he said, "No, I can't." He says, I don't know where it came from. I don't know how I got it.
And doesn't know why it left.
And he just said, I don't really know why it left, but he says I gave
it
everything I had.
The music.
Yeah, and he says he gets glimmers of it, but he can't.
He's never been able to capture it.
Yeah, and I felt sad for him because of the, you always have. I mean, you lose that voice. It's just.
Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. What can you say, Leo?
No, it's true, but it was a bad thing, though. But I think he still has it. It's just that he can't find it right now in the last. I'll tell you, I used to really admire Tom Waits. I loved his stuff, but boy, I picked up that last album of his, and in fact, look, I got it here. It's called what is it? It's a one on tour that he did, Glitter and Doom, and his live album. And he got a little rough around the edges on that one, and a little hard to listen to him anymore. On that particular version, but that was an experimental one as well that they were trying to do.
Well, you're
kind of
getting
off
topic there, Leo.
But anyway, I was thinking, have you heard that album by any chance, or anything?
No, I haven't.
No, it's an interesting thing to listen to. But
he gave me a CD of it, but I haven't listened to it.
Take a listen to it. See what you think.
Yeah, Leo, before it gets too late, Preston, do you have an email address where some of the listeners would want to email you?
No, I'm a phone person.
Okay.
And I'm in the phone book.
Okay.
You look up Preston Nichols in Cairo, New York.
There we go.
Or as they say, Cairo, New York.
Cairo.
Or if you want to put a phone number out, we can... I have no problem.
Would you mind? I mean, if anybody has a problem, they can email me, brotherdixon@aol.com, and I'd be glad to pass on the phone number.
Or why don't you give it? Or if you feel comfortable giving the phone, go right ahead, and people can contact.
Yeah, it's area code 518. 618-622-9397. Again, it's 518-622-9397. And I can be written to in P.O. Box 13, Cairo, New York, 12413.
There you have it.
I think, you know, where we just went off the air, but I wanted to, I just wanted to say, they got your phone number, and we'll, mm-hmm. people will be able to pick it up in the archives right at about 10 minutes.
Sure.
So, but I want to thank you so much, President. And George, thank you for,
coordinating
it for us.
Yeah. And we'd love to see you back on again, Preston, to talk about some of your other books. We kind of got a little bit off topic there, but it was still delightful to talk to you and connect up again.
Yeah, you guys want to come over, just give me a call. Come on over.
Well, we'll make a date within the next month or so, Preston, that's for sure.
Yeah.
By then, I should have the sound room cleaned out again.
Well,
maybe I'll come give you a hand with it, Preston, if you need be.
No, it's something I have to do myself.
Oh, okay. Well, fine. You have to understand, I'm retarded now. I have all the time in the world.
And I'm retarded, too.
Well, my daughter Heather had a baby last November, and the baby came home now, so it's old sounds that I haven't heard, geez, in 23 years, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, let's hope you don't have to bring up your grandchild.
No, I don't think so, Preston. Those years are over with, my friend.
Huh?
Oh, well.
Archive, for those who don't know, he's got an archive of music that you won't believe. Anything that you ever heard of,
He has
somewhere in that room, in his archives, and he can play it for you, and you can have an out of body experience in that thing. It's a wonderful ride, Preston. It's a great mission.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's great to talk to you, and we'll be talking to you real soon. Enjoy.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye bye. I'll be speaking with you, Preston.
And we'll be talking to you soon, George.
Okay.
Okay. Good night now.
Bye bye.
And
do I hang up now?
Yeah, you can
hang up.
All right.
Okay.
That was Preston Nichols and George Dixon talking to us about some out of body experiences
it's almost impossible to it took me the entire summer to understand the scope of what Preston has done in his work.
Amazing.
You go to, highly recommend, go to skybooks.com, and there's the entire Montauk
you'll have to
series.
Read it. There's so much to talk about that we only touched on.
There's five or six books in the series, and they're all fascinating, and by Peter Moon and
Preston Nichols,
and so there's some other people as well. The latest one was written by a Romanian writer. In conjunction with Peter Moon.
Fascinating book.
So we wish you the best, and we'll see you next week. And we thank you for joining us. And
good night, folks.
I hope you tell your friends about us. And good night.